Swim check 1, 2. Bike check 1, 2. Run check 1, 2. I think we're ready. Let's try this. Welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck Podcast, a podcast where we explore the sport of triathlon from a variety of perspectives to help beginner triathletes on their journey. I am your host, Mashonda Shines. All right, y'all. Welcome back to another edition of Try Beginner's Luck. I tell you, I didn't think it would be April and I would still have on my favorite sweater, but clearly it is because the weather doesn't want to fully break into warmth yet. I don't know about you all, but I am ready for some warm weather. Until then, I guess I just have to bring in somebody who's coming in hot this year. And I tell you, I mean, when you start the year off winning 3 races in a row, you already know you are lightening things up. So with that said, I don't know if I should take off my sweater. Oh, that's too much shoulder. I'm not going to show you that much. But she's been on the scene for a very, very long time. And she started her professional career in 2013. Became a triathlete in 2007. So 2007, then 2013. And then in 2024, she does 3 races the very first weekend of the year and wins them all. I think it's called the Dopey Challenge, but she definitely came in the year hot. She is warming up this podcast. It is April. I get to welcome professional triathlete, multi-sport coach, and fellow podcaster. She's a duo co-host of the Iron Women podcast that's brought to you by Feisty Media. And so I get to bring to this podcast, the Try Beginner's Luck podcast, Miss Haley Chura. Haley, welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck podcast. How are you doing?
Oh my goodness. I'm so good. I think that was such a glowing introduction, Mashonda. I feel so special. When you said like I won 3 races, I was like, I won 3 races. And I'm like, oh my goodness, how have I already forgotten the Dopey Challenge? That was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And thank you for that reminder. I needed that today on this Monday.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you forget. You have so much going on that this is April. Like we're already in April, but that's only 4 months ago. But I guess you know what? A lot has happened.
Yeah. I don't know. What is time these days? I feel like I can't figure it out. I do have on my desk, I have my like mouse ears from the Dopey Challenge, from the marathon, Run Disney marathon weekend. So I don't know how, it's like literally in front of my face. Sometimes it's just nice to have someone else acknowledge that. But starting the year with the Dopey Challenge, so if anyone isn't familiar, it's at Disney World, Walt Disney World in Florida. And it is a 5K, 10K, half marathon, and a marathon on 4 consecutive days. And it's a big endurance feat. It's not something I normally do, as you mentioned. I'm usually a triathlete, but...
Oh, I'm thinking. This is my thinking face. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm,
oh, okay. I want to make sure the audio was okay, but it was...
No. So that's what happens. Like while you're talking, I'm thinking of other things and it just startled me. So don't mind me.
So I don't normally do a lot of standalone running races. I think triathlon is definitely more my thing, but one of my really good friends she just turned 40 this year and wanted to kind of celebrate with a wild running event. And I, as you mentioned, I do coach, and I feel like a lot of the women I coach actually love Run Disney events. And this is something I had never competed in myself. I didn't really have a strong connection to Disney prior to running these races. But now that I went and again, went all in with all 4 of them, 4 consecutive days, I dressed in costumes, I ran in costumes and really soaked up all the Disney magic. And I can say I get it now. Like I get why people love these races because they are really well run. They're very fun. Most people are in costume. They are just really fun kind of celebrations of being a runner and being part of that community. And I'm so thankful I got that experience. And then winning the first 3 was a big bonus because the finish line is pretty fun. And those photos, when you're wearing a costume coming across the line, it was a fun experience. And I, I've been an athlete for a long time, but I don't think I've quite had a finish line like that. So I soaked it in.
I love it. So wearing the costumes, that adds a layer of extraness onto it. Like, I don't know what you would call it, but what was it like to pick out the outfits and how did you train with them? Or you just said, okay, this is the outfit I'm going to wear. I'm going to come with these fairy wings, you know, the glitter. Like, how did you practice to make sure that everything was race, quote unquote, safe?
Right. So I again knew from my friends that I'd seen what they had worn in past races, and I kind of had an idea, but once I knew I was going to run this race, so I raced the Ironman World Championships in Kona in October of 2023, and so I kind of put off like all my Disney planning until after that. Luckily, my friend Shelley, who I ran with, she actually had done the bulk of the planning, and she's a much, much more organized human than me. So she had like arranged all of everything else for us, and all I really had to do was the costumes for myself. And I kind of started with I wear a lot of green. Like I started this triathlon, my multi-sport adventure at Dynamo Swim Club and Dynamo Multi-Sport in Atlanta, Georgia. And their primary colors are green and yellow. I wear a lot of green. And I think early in the year when I had signed up, I actually talked to Carissa Galloway, who's one of the Run Disney announcers, and she's also an Ironman announcer. And she kind of put out a call to action on her social media, being like suggesting some green costumes. And so I had a few that started there. And then I really relied on my mom, and then one of my other good friends who's run Disney race, my friend Megan, kind of helped me like piece together from what I had already, like certain skirts and outfits. And then they actually encouraged me to try some of the accessories. So Megan found the wings that I ran the 5K as Tinkerbell. And so I had a green sparkly skirt, a green tank top that I think my mom had found on Etsy. And then Megan helped me find these wings from Sparkle Athletics that were like running wings. And I'm like, they make running wings? And I'm like, can I run in these? And so as you're mentioning, like, how did I train to make sure they're safe? I didn't at all, because what happened was I live in Montana. It's winter. And also, I just didn't quite have the confidence to like just go run around my neighborhood in wings. Like, my neighbors already think I'm crazy, which I mean, so I guess I should have just done it. They already think I'm ridiculous. Like, I wear, again, a lot of neon triathlon. I'm always like, my bike is bright green. Why were the wings the thing that stopped me? I don't know. But I didn't do it. I planned to kind of do it over New Year's. And then I got really sick right before I left. And so I didn't really test anything out. And so I was like, the first time I ever wore those wings was actually like the morning of the 5K. And that's not what I would recommend, but it kind of added this element of whimsy and fun to the whole event. And a lot of the times when I'm racing Ironman or triathlon, it's really high stress and really high pressure. And so to get out there with the wings and to see that I was not the only one dressed like that. Actually, like, I feel like my costume wasn't as ambitious as some of the other people's. I just embraced it, and I was like, let's just see what happens. And that was one reason I wore the wings for the 5K, because I was like, okay, it's the shortest race. If something goes wrong, you know, I can pull over and figure this out, and it's not like I'm in the middle of nowhere. And it ended up actually, I did a little test run in the hotel, and I was like, oh, they feel fine. And for the actual race, I barely noticed them. I think they really are actually made as running wings. And I maybe noticed it a little bit when I had a tailwind, because they kind of press on your back and it was a little warm. But other than that, I mostly was so thankful I had them when I came across the finish line. I wasn't expecting to win, but to have that photo of me dressed as Tinkerbell coming across the line was so cool. And so once I had that first race under my belt running the wings, I had a lot more confidence. And so the second day I had planned to dress as Elsa from Frozen, and I had a cape. And that was another one I was like, I have no idea how this is going to work. And I had just, you know, found a children's cape off Amazon, and I'm like, maybe it will work. I don't know. And again, had not tried it until race morning. And I was relying on Shelly a lot to kind of help me like pin stuff so that hopefully it would work. But it was again pretty much fine. And that morning was colder. And so mostly that would be my suggestion on like some of these costumes. If you get too ambitious and you get a very warm day, I think it could make for a very warm run, having a lot of extra accessories. But Ultimately, it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. And it's so much fun seeing what everyone else is wearing and to really go all in. And so for the 10K, I did run dressed as Elsa. I think that one, I feel like, got the most social media attention. For the half marathon, which was actually shortened to only 7 miles, which I was not sad about. I was 7 miles is a little more, I prefer that anyway. I actually just ran as a Dalmatian, and that was more of a traditional running outfit. I had just found a red choker on Etsy to kind of make it look like I had a collar on. And then for the marathon, which was the one race I did not win, I finished fourth, but I was really happy with my race. I ran as Dopey for in honor of the Dopey Challenge. And again, that was a little bit less ambitious of a costume. I think if I were to do a Disney race in the future, which I would love to, I actually want to be more ambitious with my costumes because I think it is a wild, big part of the event. And it just, there's something really fun about standing on the start line in a costume. And I honestly don't know if I could do a standalone running race in like a traditional outfit. Ever again. I mean, obviously triathlon is a little bit harder because we have the swim and you can't really do quite as much glitter for that. But I think it just helped me keep a different perspective of like, I am doing this purely for fun and for my enjoyment. And then what was wild is that I learned I could actually run pretty fast like that too. So it was a good lesson.
And what do you think? Do you think the fun element of it with no expectations help you to release the, making sure you monitor your time, which allowed you to be a little bit freer in running and just absorb the actual race feel so that that helped propel you faster, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. I think I am definitely someone who gets very nervous for races. And I think that it is good pe for people to hear that that happens to athletes at every level. And athletes who've been doing this for 1 year or, 15 years, I think nerves are, they're normal and they mean you care, but I do think there's ways to keep things a little bit more big picture. And I think that for me, the Run Disney races did that, and having I was kind of a celebration of being like fit and healthy enough to be in that race, to be on that start line. It is hard to be fit enough on January 4th to, run four races in a row. And I can't believe, I think there were 8,000 people who did all four races. So it's not like I was alone in this. There is a community of it. And at the finish line of the 5K, I met a guy who, it was his 10th year in a row doing it. And that is just so impressive. And I should also add that these races start at 5 a.m. And so that's when they start. So it's like a 2 a.m. wake up that to get ready, which is
And
very early.
that's probably because it needs to be finished before the actual park opens.
Yes, exactly. And that was also something that we did consciously make a decision. My sister also ended up coming and running too, and that was a really fun surprise. And we all like Shelley knew a lot about Disney. Hannah and I knew a lot less, and so we really wanted to have an experience of Disney. And that was, we actually did go to the parks after the 5K and 10K. We gave ourselves the half marathon day to like recover. But and I knew that that wasn't necessarily the ideal way to race, but it was January and I wanted to know what the Magic Kingdom was like. I wanted to know what Animal Kingdom and all the parks, and we actually went to all four parks and we monitored our exertion. We finished pretty early in the day. I get a lot of motion sickness, so luckily I kind of had some guidance on which rides to ride and maybe which ones not to. And we also did a really good job of eating, and I think that was also key because when you're doing endurance events back to back to back like that, like you do have to refuel. And I was actually pleasantly surprised with some of the food options. I'm a big like pretzel person, like giant pretzels, and there's a lot of those in Disney, so I did enjoy those a lot. But I think embracing the whole thing and the whole experience of running the races, going to the parks, and not necessarily needing everything to be quite as perfect as I might do when I'm racing as a professional at a world championship for Ironman, where I want everything at exactly the right time. Sometimes I think it's good to like have things be a little chaotic and maybe not perfect, and realize that they can still go really, really well. And I think I can carry that into my triathlons this year. And if things aren't perfect, I'm like, hey, you've run a really fast 5K with Tinkerbell wings. You can handle this.
And speaking of the perfect race and transitioning, so yeah, so you got your wild card, and that had to be like, wait a minute, I don't have enough time to technically prepare. So you've probably had to be prepared for that call because you didn't know if you were going to get a wild card or not. So what was that like, and how did you transition the wins that you took at the beginning of the year into the T100 race? Because you actually did very well with the T100 races. Or
I
the T100
know.
race.
Yes,
Yeah.
I got to do the very first T100 race in Miami and just a few weeks ago. And I didn't get a lot of heads up on that. I think I had like 2.5 weeks. And so I went into this year knowing I was going to, run the Dopey Challenge, which I knew that would take something out of me, but I thought my next race would be Ironman Texas at the end of April. So I'm like, okay, there's enough time to recover. And I did think, this is, I was running a little bit more than I normally would, probably in December leading into the Dopey Challenge, but I didn't do a traditional marathon build, which is one reason. I ran a 2:55 marathon, which is like a really fast marathon time, but my PR in the marathon is a 2:43. So I wasn't going for a best time in Disney, but I wanted to actually run like a solid run. And my idea was like, okay, if I can run this at the Dopey Challenge Marathon, maybe I can run it off the bike. And so there was a little bit of a training component to that. And so I'm kind of was in a thick of Ironman training, and I did get that invite as a wild card to the T100 race. And I think that one of the things about me that I like the most in the sport is I have been in the sport for a long time. And one of the coolest things that I think is still happening is that there's still races I want to do. And sometimes there's even conflicts and there's multiple races I want to do at the same time. And I think that's a really healthy thing to like have that kind of a problem when you've been racing for more than a decade as a professional. And that's one of the things that keeps me going. And I am also an athlete that I think at this point in my career, I'm able to pivot pretty quickly and easily. I mean, I won't say easy. There were some tears shed, getting everything together for Miami. These T100 races are a big deal. I mean, there were, I think, like four women who had won world championships on the start line. I mean, Daniela Ryf, who's won the Ironman World Championships 5 times. Lindsay, or not Lindsay, Lucy Charles Barkley, who just won the Ironman World Championships most recently. I mean, it was they're big pressure events, but it's also big opportunity. And I do have some of the photos from Disney still in my, there's one right behind me, but I kind of did try to like channel that a little bit of being like, okay, take that joy that you felt in those finish lines. And like, remember, I didn't make any money in Disney. I spent money. And so now I'm trying to make money, but remember like the joy you felt just from the exertion and just from being at a race, even though it wasn't necessarily a work trip, and try to take that into this high pressure race. And also, I think even though I didn't have like a lot of a build up to it, I knew I was fit. I was fitter than I usually am in March. And I was like, let's see what happens. And you have to give yourself that opportunity. So that's kind of how I went into it. Luckily, I had experience racing on the Speedway in Miami. I had raced there previously the year before. And so I kind of knew what the track was like. I knew what the conditions would be like. I knew it would be pretty hard. The difference was the strength of the field. And also the race was a little bit longer, and we started at 4:50 p.m. So that was also unique, where the Disney races started super early, which was a little bit unique for me and running a lot in the dark. And then this T100 race is running in the dark as well, but in the evening dark. And are these races challenging for they're challenging in the distance that you're covering. They're challenging in the context of the race. They're challenging in that you might not know exactly what you're getting into when you get into it. But I think, it's what also excites me. I'm like, can I handle this? Can I get the most out of myself from this situation. And I think that, I mean, you've raced Ironman. It never goes as you plan. It never does. And so I think there's ways that you can take what you've learned in these races and how you get yourself through them and problem solve that has also allowed me to take that to other areas of my life, where you kind of learn and grow as a human as well. And that's something I'm really, really thankful for. So when I have those hard moments, when I'm like, I'm on the verge of tears because I'm like, how am I going to pull this off? Can I do it? I try to take a step back and remind myself, I'm like, this is what growing feels like. It's very painful right now, but someday in the future, you'll be comfortable at home and you'll be thankful that you made it through.
Speaking of growing and learning, let's go back to the beginning. You went to high school in South Carolina. You were recruited by one of the best schools in Georgia, some would say. I mean, I'm kind of neutral since I didn't go to UGA, but UGA is an amazing school. Let's just go back to being a Division I swimmer at UGA and starting from there, because I think that's where you were with a group of competitors where you guys went to the championships and you had a lot of things that you were able to explore there. So let's take us back to the co collegiate days, as they would say.
Right. I would say a lot of all of my success, most of my success right now is thanks to the time at UGA. And when I was coming out of high school, my number one goal, I wanted to be on a championship swim team in college. And that was what I wanted more than anything. I wanted to be on the best possible team I could be on. And I went to Georgia and I was really nervous because I was definitely like a small fish in a big pond. Both the size of the school, it's a large university. The swim team was incredibly storied, and the coaches and my teammates were, Olympians and really aspiring Olympians. And it was what I needed at that time. I wanted to be around people who were at the top of their game, and that is what I got. And I learned so much. I learned so much about being a competitor, about being a teammate, about hard work. And I think about all those lessons still today. And I was really lucky to be on the 2005 NCAA championship team, which is still one of the coolest things that has ever happened in my athletic career. And I got ninth at the Olympic trials in 2004, which was just an incredible experience. I mean, I'm a kid who grew up in Montana and eventually ended up in South Carolina, and just I didn't come from like a storied swimming program necessarily. And I don't think if anyone knew me when I was 10 years old, they would have even guessed that I would end up where I have. And I think I have to take a step back sometimes and be really impressed with myself for that. But when I think about my time at Georgia, I mean, it was exhausting. I mean, it's really, really intense. It was very intense, but so much fun. Like so much fun just being a part of that team. And even this past weekend, the NCAA championship was actually in Athens, so for women. And I love still following the races. I'm always cheering on the dogs. And one of the women I actually, well, she, we weren't on the team exactly together, but she was there training. She is now the coach, Steph Williams. And that's kind of the coolest thing too. Like we've seen my teammates, some of them went on and they went to three Olympic games. Some of them went on and broke American records. And it's one of the good things about social media is it's easy to keep in touch, but like Steph is now the head coach at Georgia. And, a few of the other women were back there. Maritza Kariya, who was, again, wasn't on the team with me, but was there training, got to hand out the medals for the 100 free, which was the event that she swam in college. And I think that there's like just some really cool things in that, in getting older and getting to see what these women who were so incredible when they were 18 to 22 years old are now doing now. And I feel really, really proud to be a part of that alumni group. And so I'm wearing my Georgia shirt right now, my Georgia swimming and diving sweatshirt right now, because definitely I've been representing all weekend. I'm so, so proud. We actually had the woman who won the mile, the 1650, was from Georgia. So I mean, they're still like a really, really great program there.
You should always rep your school. You never get too old to rep your school. I say rep it all day, every day. What I want to share, or what I would like for you to share, is what is a takeaway that you can share with the audience on being an individual sport like swimming is, but also a team sport. And so, how would you share with someone who needs to go out there and do the best for themselves, but also still be a part of a greater team?
Right. I think this applies even in triathlon when you don't even know some of your competitors, you know? And I think the word competitor, I probably should like look this up before I say it, but I think there is something about like it might come from the same root word as like camaraderie. And I do try to think about that. We are getting the most out of ourselves. And when I was at Georgia, I remember I was teammates with Carolyn Joyce and Amanda Weir for 1 year. They were the two women who were the top in the 50 free and the 100 free, which are very glamorous events. They're very fast events. And they had a friendship that I just really admired. I mean, they went head to head in the biggest competitions, but they had this incredible friendship. And I think they each respected each other so much. And they wanted to win, but if they weren't going to win, they wanted each other to win. You know, like if someone's going to beat me, I want it to be Kara, that kind of thing. Or I want it to be Amanda, but I want to win. And so they'd go 1-2 all the time. And it was just the coolest thing. And I think that was like just modeled a really healthy relationship. And I saw how you can want to be the best, but also use your teammates and use your competitors to get that out of yourself and to bring them along. And it doesn't take anything away from you. And so right now when I'm racing, yes, triathlon is a pretty individual sport. I mean, we might have connections with a multi-sport club or, you know, just know a friend or we ride the same bike or something like that. But you are out there by yourself, but it can be a little bit lonely. And sometimes I'll be like, why am I doing this? And then I'm like, wait, that's someone I really admire and she's doing this. So maybe it's cool that I'm doing this. And, or, you know, there's just certain things, or I've seen certain athletes have a tough day and still keep going, you know? And I think that that's also really inspired me in a way where I'm like, okay, it's okay. If I have a tough day, you know, I can think about that person and how they kept going, and I still want to be like them. I really admired them in that moment, so I'm going to work through this and keep myself going. And that's definitely how I use my competitors a lot. I think you know, there's lots of examples right now in especially women's endurance sports and women's sports where you can take these athletes and you're like, I want to be like them. And I've seen that person in a tough situation and come through, or I've seen that person on top and, you know, just keep going. And it looks so hard, but it's so cool. And so when I get into a situation, I want to do the same thing. So that's kind of like how my brain works a little bit. Maybe it's a little unusual or I don't know, but it seems to work. And a lot of times I get myself across that finish line and I get that feeling of pride in myself, and there's not much more you can ask for. So however you get there, if it's with your competitors or in any way, I think that's, you know, you do what you need to do.
Thank you for sharing that. I think sometimes we are always sharing about being a part of a team, a greater audience, a greater team, but this is also still an individual sport. And so I wanted you just to share a little bit of that. And I think you hit it spot on. Now, moving from graduation, you moved to Atlanta. We talked a little bit about this, I think, when I was on your podcast, Iron Women podcast. You moved to Atlanta to become an accountant. And luckily, we didn't talk about this part, but your boss encouraged you to run. And as a result, then encouraged you to try. Tell us about that experience, because I know we have a lot of people who listen who are making the leap from college to the real world, and they may not have a boss that was as supportive as you. But tell us about that leap into the running and then beating him by a minute and then going on to the tri world where you have been thriving ever since.
Yes. So I got extremely lucky. I think when I got out of college, I worked for an accounting firm called Bennett Thrasher in Atlanta. And I, within the first couple of weeks, I do think one of the partners was just worried about me at that in a way that I was going to be bored coming out of college swimming and going into the working world. And I will admit, like, my first couple of weeks in the working world compared to college swimming were so easy. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's gonna be terrible. I'm like, oh my goodness, I feel so rich because I'm getting a paycheck. And I, you know, I think even one of the clients I worked with, we had to be there at 7 a.m. and that was just so late compared to like the 5:15 practices that I had been going to forever. And I was, using my first paycheck to buy like fancy clothes. I was like, oh my goodness, I have a reason to wear a blazer. So I was definitely like enjoying the corporate life. But I'm really thankful because I do think that's something that's actually very hard when you come from the structured program of especially NCAA athletics or even just being in college. You think of it like a college atmosphere, a lot of times you have a gym right there and you meet your friends at the gym and everything's pretty close and walking distance. And then when you get into the working world, you kind of have to do it yourself. You have to figure this out. And it's hard. It's really hard to figure out where, if you're going to go, where are you going to go for a run? Especially if you're in a new place, where are you going to go for a bike ride? Are you going to find a pool? Are you going to have anyone to swim with? And it can be really, really intimidating. And so I am thankful that my boss did, he was like, you should run a marathon. And I think this was like, again, 2007. And I had my first job and I was like, okay, if my boss says I should run a marathon, I got to run a marathon. Like, I don't think that's quite in the job description of auditor, but I don't know what I'm getting myself into. So I ended up running training. He gave me a training plan. I think that just came out of Runner's World. And that was what I followed. And I kind of was very nervous. Like every week I was running my longest run ever. I do remember when I ran my first 8 mile run, and afterwards I actually met up with some of my former teammates from UGA. I think we went to a concert and I was talking about how I ran 8 miles that day. And these women are incredible athletes. Like they're Olympians and they were like in awe of me because I had run 8 miles because we didn't run like that in college. We swam a lot, but running 8 miles, like, is still a lot. And I'm really thankful for them in that moment because they did encourage me, even though I was not, trying to make the Olympic team like they maybe were at that time. They thought what I was doing was very cool. And I think, again, that speaks to being on a team and recognizing people can have different kind of goals. And they did cheer me on for that. And so we went to the Memphis Marathon. I went with two partners from the firm, and I was so nervous because we had to go to dinner the night before. And I was like, what do I wear? Like, I was more nervous for the dinner than I think I was for the marathon because accounting, public accounting is very hierarchical. And so to be having dinner with the partners who probably shouldn't even know my name was quite the honor in a way. And they were joking. I think we had like a flight in the early afternoon back, and we were all on the same flight. And they were joking in this, at this dinner that, if I didn't make it, they would leave me. Which, if anyone has worked in an accounting firm, like this is like it's probably a thing that actually happens. Again, very hierarchical. So I was like, okay, like I gotta make sure I get through this. And I actually ran, I think, the first half marathon with one of the partners. And then we get to the halfway and I don't know. I guess I was like 22 at the time. And I just felt really good. I felt really good. This again, I had never, that was like my first half marathon. I had never run a half marathon and I just felt really good. And I'm like, I'm gonna go ahead. And so I did. I like went ahead and I left him. I ended up like blowing up hard, in those last miles. I remember the last mile was downhill and I didn't know if I was gonna make it. And it was just like, it was so hard. It was so hard, but I was so proud of myself when I finished. And it was one of those races where I think you run the bases of a baseball field at the end. And I was like running the bases and they call out names. And it was like, as I'm coming across the finish line, like I hear them calling out his name. And I was like, oh no, what did I do? I'm like, I just beat him. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, now I'm getting fired for sure. But I mean, he definitely got a little roasted. I beat both of them. And I think they definitely got a little roasted, back at the office for getting beat by me. But I was like, my background. I'm a pretty good athlete. Like it's not that big of a stretch, but it was a good, experience for me and knowing I could run a marathon and I really enjoyed the training. I enjoyed the endurance aspect. It was what I needed after college to kind of keep me structured, keep me in sport and kind of living a healthier lifestyle. And it was funny because then he did think we should have a rematch at a local half Ironman the following spring. And That went a lot more in my favor. If you can imagine, having the swim gave me a huge, huge advantage. And I did win that one, and I don't think we ever really raced again. But he is still, to this day, has been a big supporter of me, and I am really, really thankful. And we all find our path into the sport in different ways, and I think I got really, really lucky. I don't think it isn't a typical path that you go work in an accounting firm and, someone encourages you to do triathlon, but it worked out for me. And it was funny. I think when I did leave that firm, when I was racing, decided to race pro, and I think I made a meeting with that same boss. And at this time I had moved up the ladder, and I had a pretty good accounting career, and I did really enjoy it. But I kind of got to a point where I was like, okay, it's now or never for racing pro. I want to see how good I can be. And this is a little bit more of a timeline here, to, my pro triathlon career versus accounting. I can be an 80-year-old accountant, and I probably will be an 80-year-old accountant, but I can't necessarily be an 80-year-old pro triathlete. And so I remember making a meeting with him, and I walked in the door, and he was like, "You're quitting, aren't you?" And he knew, and everyone at the firm has been so supportive. I actually ran into one of my another partner last year at the New York City Marathon. His wife was running, and my sister and I were there cheering for one of my athletes. And so we do still keep in touch a little bit, and they do cheer me on, and I'm really, really thankful for that. Like, I think, again, not always, not an experience I take for granted at all.
It pays to have a good boss. And you're
Yes.
right. Not everyone gets that experience, but when you do, you never forget the treasure that they were and that they still are in some regards because you hold pieces of what they've taught you along the way. But let's back up a little bit because you said that your first race with your boss was a half Ironman. So was that your first race? Triathlon,
I
or did you race triathlon previously before racing him in the half Ironman?
had done, I think, a couple sprints. So I did,
Okay.
I did one of the women's, like, I think now it might be called the Georgia Peach one at Acworth. Did you ever do that one?
Mm-mm.
It was an all women's race at Lake Acworth, I guess. And I had done a few sprints. And honestly, I got my you know what kicked in these early races, especially because in the early days, I probably swam like 8 times a week. I started swimming at the Dynamo Swim Club, with this Dynamo Masters team, and Maria Thrash was the coach there at the time. And I just loved it. There was a great group of people that I could swim with and learn with. And that was kind of where I did most of my training. And I would run a little bit, but it took a long time for me to like figure out where to go ride a bike. And I think we didn't have the Zwift and the Wahoos and all the fancy gadgets that we have now. And so I think I would ride. My parents and my grandparents actually had gotten me a tri bike, a secondhand tri bike for graduation. I think because I was a little lost. Again, my boss recognized that in me when I graduated. And because you go from college sports, I think you hear this a lot. Going from college sports to nothing is really hard. And I was a little lost, and I think my family recognized that, and they wanted to encourage me to potentially, do triathlon, but it still took a little while. So I jumped in a few races. I think I had done a sprint, I'd done Olympic, and before, or no, maybe I did the Olympic after the half Ironman I did was the rock and roll. So I think I actually did that before I did the Olympic distance, but it was in Macon, Georgia. And so it was a great like local race. It was actually, I'm really thankful for kind of how I got into the sport in some of those local races. And I didn't necessarily know what I was doing, but I had a bit, enough background that I could get through it. And I definitely didn't win. I did not win those early races, but I had a really good time. And I think I recognized in myself that if I put in more training, especially on the bike, and probably like some smarter training on the run, like maybe I could be really good at this. And that was where Dynamo and Dynamo Multisport really came into play. And I had met a group of women who were really great, and one of them was this woman, Betty Janelle, who is still a great friend of mine. And she was training for a half Ironman and was going to hire this guy who swam in the lane over as a coach. And his name was Matthew Rose, or his name is Matthew Rose. And so I was, I think, 23 at the time. And I was like, okay, Betty, I want to train with Betty. And Betty had taught me kind of where you could ride in both in Atlanta. So Collins Drive and where to go in Cartersville and those kind of things, and Silk Sheets, like these rides that are
So,
Atlanta can
hey,
be a, yes, yeah.
okay, I'm gonna just ask you to press the brakes real quick. The way you remember these people's names from years ago, it's incredible, but I guess that's the accounting and you remembering the names and the numbers. But let's just go back to the very first race. This is a beginner audience. And so, what about your first race do you remember that you can tell us about, like training for the very first one in 2007? Because you didn't get, I don't think you got your grandparents got you your tri bike probably leading up to the full Ironman or after you got into triathlon. So tell us about that very first race. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I just remember being very nervous and also being like, I actually think my first race, my very, very first race, I did, I think I did it right after call, like right after graduation. And it was in Clemson, and I do, it was a sprint distance. And this is also another one where I think I did rely on the kindness of some of the people on the UGA Tri Club. And they, I remember one time we went to there, and I rode 12 miles. I think the course was 12 miles, and we rode the course together, and I 12 miles was like so far. Like it felt so far. It felt so far. And so I remember all these things. And I also, I think I dropped my chain on the bike. And so I, you know, had bike grease all over me because I like had to fix it. And then I think I also, you know, I didn't know what to wear. I definitely didn't know what to wear because I think I wore a swimsuit and then maybe put on shorts over it, but I had no idea what I was doing. And I think there's a lot of beauty in that. Like I said, I'm really thankful for how I got into the sport through these local races. I really think that all women's race was also a catalyst. I remember it having like the best ever post race like food. And I was just enjoying it, but it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I do need to have training partners. I do need to figure out like a little bit more how to structure this. I knew that from my swimming background that if I had good training partners and if I had a little bit more structure, maybe someone who knows a little bit more than me, helping me, then I could, you know, not drop my chain and maybe someone would teach me what to wear. And, because I also don't think I rode in bike shorts for like a very long time. I would just ride my bike in running shorts, like a tri bike in running shorts and like a tank top. And it took a long, I mean, I was, again, I felt very rich, but then I would like realize how expensive bike kits were. And I was like, I don't need them. So Betty was the one who definitely told me, she's like, go to REI, get some bike shorts. It will change your life. And that was really, really good advice as well as all the things of how to where to ride. But the reason I can remember these people's names is that they're very much still in my life. So Matthew Rose, who started coaching me in, I guess 2009, you know, and who was just a random guy at the pool, is still my coach today. And so I think that's, you know, it's a testament to him too that I've come this far because he did kind of start with a newbie with some potential and has turned me into someone, you know, who wins races, which is pretty cool.
And continuously wins races, which is even cooler. So our first race 2007, then you do your first half distance in 2009. Is that where you raced your former boss? So talk about that because at some point you had to realize, okay, long distance is a better suit for me, that endurance racing was where you wanted to go. So is it was it after the first race that you did in 2009, your half? Or did you continue racing and discover, okay, I really like this? So tell us about your first race and when you, I guess you decided that you liked the half distance.
Right. So I think it's kind of interesting because I was not a distance swimmer as a swimmer or in college. I swam the 200 backstroke and the 400 IM were my main events. So those are like 2 to 5 minute races. And I thought, you know, I thought a 5 minute race was so long, like so long. So I do think Even when I got into triathlon, when I did that first sprint, my goal was always Ironman. And I had kind of grown up, I had a friend whose mom did Ironman. And so I had known a few people who did Ironman. And I just thought they were the coolest. I just thought it was so cool. And I just thought, you know, my parents had done some shorter triathlons, and I was like, it's just what adults do. Like I recognize I was really, really fortunate to kind of grow up that way and to believe that I could do that. And so honestly, like that was what I wanted to do immediately when I started. I wanted to go long. And I think maybe part of that was because it was so different than swimming. I was not going to improve anymore in my 200 backstroke or my 400 IM at these short races. Like I was not getting any better, but there was something about going longer. I could get better at that and I could see that improvement. And so I think that was the draw from the marathon. And I think in maybe in our culture, and I don't know if this is correct or not, it could be wrong, that we kind of glamorize these long distance races, the marathon, the Ironman. And I do think it's funny that, you know, 15 years into this, I actually think short races are amazing. I think 5Ks are amazing. I think sprint distance races are amazing. You know, I'm more, you know, these T100, 100 kilometer races, I think that they're amazing. And so I think there's like a season in life for everything. And so that was my initial goal, even when I was 22, 23, 24 years old, was I wanted to go as long as I could because I just thought it was impressive. And so I did initially want to do Ironman, and I kind of knew, I think, that it was going to be a big undertaking. I actually like signed up for to race Ironman Florida. I think I signed up in the, it was around Thanksgiving of 2008. And I remember because I had just taken, I think, I don't know, one of the parts of the CPA exam, and then signed up for Ironman for in a year, which is like, I don't know. Again, I was just in a weird place in life. And I'm like, I just want to do the hardest things. So I signed up for Ironman Florida because it was relatively close to Atlanta. I had a year to train. And that was, you know, when I met Betty and when I met Matthew. And that plan changed because what happened in 2009 was actually I raced, was actually what first happened was Betty qualified for Hawaii. She raced a half Ironman in Hawaii and she qualified. And there's something about seeing your training partner qualify for the Ironman World Championships that, you know, at that time you could qualify in a half. And Matthew was like, you know, you're Betty's training partner. Why don't you try to qualify for Hawaii too in a half? So I went up to Rhode Island, and this was, I mean, so maybe I've been pivoting and doing things last minute for my whole life, but I did. I think I had about a month and I was just like, sure. And I literally probably spent nearly every penny in my bank account going up to Rhode Island, and I won my age group. And this was my first like official 70.3, and I had a fantastic race. I won my age group and I qualified for Hawaii. And I mean, I'm very thankful that I think back then, like going to Hawaii was like $500. Like that's what the entry fee is. So it was like, I know it was a lot more affordable. So I took that slot. And so my very first Ironman in 2009 was Ironman Hawaii. And I was 24 years old. And it was an adventure. It was an experience. I learned a lot on that day.
So it's so interesting that you said that you qualified via a half, because I just had the Smyer sisters on last week, Karen and Donna, who said that that's how they qualified too with the half. Like the process was so different back then than it is today. And so it just goes to show you how much sport has grown since we've, just since sport has evolved. It's constantly evolving. But I also think, you mentioned about privilege. Be proud of that. Like you had parents who were in the sport, and so that's an awesome way to, I think that's just a point of, like, it's a privilege, like it's an amazing thing. Like don't be afraid to shout it out. Like that's
Oh,
awesome.
I'm not. I think, I
Awesome.
mean, I don't have kids, but I coach a lot of parents, and I know that there is sometimes I just know from being the kid in that kind of situation, like seeing your parents go out for a run is actually a really powerful thing. Because I did grow up thinking like that's what you do when you get older. You go out for a run. And it wasn't until I was kind of in the corporate world or now working with athletes, realizing that a lot of people had to like learn as adults how to be an athlete. And I'm really, really thankful for my parents that, not only they drove me to all the swim practices and swim meets and, supported me and helped me get that first bike, but then also just that they did model that. And I do think that that's a good thing for parents to hear occasionally. Like, you are doing actually a really, really good thing for your kids by showing them what it means to have a healthy, active lifestyle, even as an adult.
Because more is caught than it is taught. We can tell people what to do all day long, but when we see things, we're like, oh, I want to do it. I can repeat it. And I think it's just a good seed that parents plant in their children's lives is that seed of having an active lifestyle no matter what. Like we had a beginner on, Kelly Reisner, a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, I just want my boys to be able to see me, active, her and her husband active, so that they will grow up to do that. And I think Taylor Nipp, her mom was active and her dad was a runner. Her mom was a triathlete, but she saw that growing up. And so the more you see something, the more it's you believe that it's the right thing to do because you've seen it so long. So I just say shout out to all the parents who are out here trying, whether you're just starting for yourself and getting the opportunity to change the legacy of your children, or those who have had it and it's generational, like Tiencia. Tiencia's dad has been a runner forever and she's been able to fall into it. And so I just believe that no
And
matter
now
how you come into
her
sport, and now
kids are
her kids,
crushing it.
exactly. So it's just an opportunity for everybody to get in where you fit in and just try because that's what it's all about. So you've had an incredible career from, college to now. But going pro was a little bit different for you. You were like, wait a minute, I need to do this. But you figured out a way to go pro and not be broke.
Kind
Let's
of.
talk
I
about it.
mean, how
I
do
mean,
we, what
well,
do we define
both
as broke?
relative,
No.
to be able to live and to sustain a lifestyle versus some pros don't, they're still working full-time jobs, but you were able to figure out a way that you could do this with the help of some beautiful ambassadors or sponsors. So let's talk
Yeah.
about that.
Well, I think I, Hilary Biscay, who was a pro triathlete who's a little older than me. I had a conversation with her early in my triathlon career, and she did encourage me. She's like, "I think you could go pro, but like, what you do want is like a cushion." And so she's like, "Start saving money now." And so the accountant in me did. I took money out of every single paycheck for 4 years, and I had a savings account that I did not touch. And so that I had a chunk of money when I left my job, and I had a bit of a safety net. I also was very fortunate. I had, my boss and the firm was really supportive, where they actually said, like, okay, if you don't like it in a year, you can have your job back. And that's like an incredible safety net. Hopefully they were serious about that. But I think, I had those kind of things. I will say the beginning was very hard in ways that I did not expect. I didn't realize how lonely it would be to like go from working in an office, having coworkers, talking to people all the time, to like really being mostly on my own. I'd occasionally see people at the pool, but that was actually like shockingly hard. And I think I really, really struggled with that the first year. I was very fortunate that one of a good friend of mine actually encouraged me to start coaching her. And that was because initially I didn't think I wanted to coach, and I'm still so thankful that, she took a chance with me as a brand new coach. And I it's one of those points of pride, I think, in my coaching career. But so I started coaching, and I started coaching with one person. And then I think like the second year I had, three. So it was a very slow process there too. But that did take a little bit of the financial pressure off from racing, because I actually think one of the worst pieces of advice I got when I first started racing pro was that I would race better because I was trying to, get money so I could eat. And that kind of thing. Like, when I was racing someone, I'd have to be like, I have to pass that person, otherwise I can't pay rent. And that was too much for me. That was way too much, because it was kind of one of those things, like, I have an accounting degree, I have a CPA license, there's an easier way for me to make money. Like, I don't want to have to, like, I can't eat if I don't pass that person. And so that didn't work for me. I ended up, living with friends and trying to cut expenses that way. I tried a lot of different things. And ultimately, coaching has been a good answer. And then sponsorship, I do have, some long-term sponsors, and that has been a good, just help. But ultimately, coaching is probably where I make most of my money, even more from sponsorship, even more than prize money. And what that does is gives me like financial stability in a way that I don't get super stressed out, and I'm able to have like a little bit of a steadier income, which is something that I needed as a person. I couldn't handle quite the ups and downs of just racing or living off prize money.
But when did you start coaching? Because I'm still thinking we're still in 20, like 2013 when you're just starting out. So when did you didn't start coaching until what, 2017-ish?
No, I started coaching in 2013. I just had one person. And then TNCI, I think I actually
Oh.
started coaching her in 2014. I think we are going on a decade, if you can
Oh,
believe that. Yeah.
wow.
So it was very slow at first. Like it was. And I tell this to people because people are like, how do you get into coaching? And I mean, I was lucky that I had good mentors. I had Matthew, my own coach, who I'm thankful for Matthew, Maria Thrash at Dyno Multisport, who has unfortunately since passed away, but great mentor to me, Hillary Biscay, who was a great mentor and a sponsor for a long time. I had these people who kind of like let me bounce ideas off of them, and I had these, again, these athletes who took chances with me. And I feel like things have mostly worked out, and it has slowly grown, but I definitely now it's taken me, 10 years, 10, 11 years to really get to where the last couple of years have been, okay, I feel more confident in my coaching, and I feel like this is, I'm pretty good at this. And I think that we've had some successes. And I think when you're valuing yourself as a coach too, it's not just like race wins or qualifying for Kona or qualifying for certain things. Like I've coached some athletes, some of the most, just rewarding coaching experiences have been keeping someone healthy enough to run a half marathon or a marathon, or helping someone who doesn't necessarily have a swim background swim a long distance event. I think that has been really, really cool. So sometimes the coaching wins are a little bit hard to quantify, but over time it has become something that not only is helps me mentally and just to like live a lifestyle that I feel more comfortable with, but also kind of just again keeps me feeling like I have coworkers and that loneliness that I felt in the beginning. So it has taken off. It's taken off probably since 2017, my coaching, and I think I've bragged more about people. So I owe some people from those early years a lot more brags. But social media wasn't as big back then. We didn't have the platforms to sing it from the rooftops like we do now.
Yeah, I appreciate what you said about having mentors. Because I think that's so important and it's key. I think you should have a mentor in every area in which you're in or see people that you want to aspire to be like. So I appreciate that you've kept in contact with that and you mentioned that for someone who's listening so they can know like it's okay. You can even have a try, person who's racing who could be your mentor, if you want to just grow in sport. And the fact that you mentioned about coaching, how it's been a process and it hasn't grown overnight, but it has been a process. So my question for you now is, how do you balance being a professional triathlete and also being a good coach?
I think one, I'm honest with my athletes, that the type of coach that I am, like I try to tell them, I mean, for the most part, they know that I am still racing. And so if athletes want a coach who is going to like, be on deck or be at the races, I'm not that person yet. I might be in the future, but right now, the only way I'm really at a race is if I happen to also be racing. And so I'm not necessarily the person who can be yelling splits at you from the sideline. And so it is one of those things, like if that's the kind of coach you need, then I'm probably not the right coach for you. And so I try to be honest up with that up front. I don't run a camp. These are things that maybe in the future I'd like to do, but while I'm racing, I just can't quite handle that. But I encourage them, go to someone else's camp, because I think camps can be very fun if that is fun. But those are some of the downsides, I think. But from the pro sides, I'm in the race sometimes. I do understand a lot of the dynamics and how things have changed, and I understand sometimes I know the course, and I think that can be a benefit. And then for me personally, I look at my life and I'm like, okay, I am going to do the best with my racing given my life. And you know, I understand that some of my competitors aren't, they're not coaching, you know, and they're not necessarily like having, you know, writing training plans, or you know, maybe they have a little bit more time to nap, but I'm like, this is my life and I'm so proud of myself for what I've done with what I have. And so I'm also like really proud of my athletes, and I do think there's times when, you know, I learn from them in a way. I shouldn't admit this, but you know, I learn from them about like, I watch how they balance their lives, and you know, they're all busy. Every triathlete, like this sport like attracts people who are very busy and do a lot of things and are very high achievers. And so there are times when I'm like, okay, what would this person do in this situation? Can I learn from that? And so it's just about, you know, still trying to make sure I take care of myself and I get enough sleep and I get my workouts done. But it isn't that different from having a regular job. But the nice thing is the flexibility. I mean, I work from home, I work from a computer, I can work on the road, I can work at a race. And that's a little bit different than like necessarily having to be somewhere, but it's hard sometimes. It's definitely hard sometimes, but I think sometimes the struggle is what makes it really worth it. 'Cause I'm like, wow, again, like last year in Kona was one of the coolest experiences for me because I had six athletes racing, and that was the most I've ever had at one race. Like that was a lot for me, and all six finished. We had really good races. I had a great race. I went my best time in Kona ever, and I finished 17th, which was really incredible. And so I think, you know, it was just like, that's something I think to be really proud of, to like have six women finish the race and to have me finish the race. And is, you know, it's not what everyone is doing, but it worked for all of us, and it took some planning, and I think it took some patience from them on that side. 'Cause again, I'm not someone who could like necessarily meet with them the day before the race, 'cause I'm also checking in my bike. And so it's a little bit hard, but thankfully the group of people that I work with are kind and patient with me, and we make it work.
I love that. I was going to bring that up, but you did it. So that is so dope that you were racing with six of your athletes and all of you finished. But the first ever all women's Ironman World Championship in Kona. So that's a pretty amazing feeling, and I feel like should be one of your top coaching, like one of your top coaching moments to be able to race with your athletes and, you know, have them come across the finish line. Haley, you've done so much. You're also a podcaster with Feisty Media. Tell us a little bit about the Iron Women's podcast that you get to co-host.
Right. I co-host with Alyssa Gadeski, and I have done that since 2017. And we interview mostly women in endurance sports and mostly professional triathletes and people in the industry like yourself. And it has been a really fun way for me to connect more, I think, with the triathlon community. 'Cause again, going back to when I first stepped away from accounting, I was shocked by how lonely it was. And I think it has helped me a lot to respect my, you know, the other women in this sport, because again, that's what keeps me going. And then it has been a fun way to connect with the audience. And I don't know if it has is this way for you, but it's fun to go to a race and have people say like, oh, I love that episode, or you know, I love the podcast. And because I mean, podcasting can get a little lonely and a little like one-sided. You just talk to one person and I'm like, does anyone listen to this? And then you go and you meet these people, and you realize you have this community. And I think that is really, really special. And I do think initially when I got into the sport, and again, social media wasn't as big, I had a lot to say. I mean, obviously I'm very chatty. I had a lot to say, and it felt like sometimes, you know, someone like me wasn't going to be interviewed. And so you kind of had to be that person. I'm like, okay, there's more people like me. There's more people like me. And I love being someone's like first interview, you know, that kind of thing. Like the first time they've been on a podcast, because sometimes they'll be nervous and I'm like, there's only one way to get better. You just got to keep doing it. And And so again, these are good life skills to have for if you end up in a job interview or you end up having to give a presentation at work sometimes. And so I'm thankful. I've learned a lot. I think we've shared some really cool stories. I've grown in different ways and, you know, met some really incredible people. And I think, you know, podcasting led me to you a little bit. And also I'm a fan. I like to listen to other podcasts. And I think that is kind of a fun way that stories are shared these days. And I'm someone who, you know, I'm doing an easy run. I run a lot by myself. And so sometimes it can be fun to put in a podcast and feel like you're kind of running with a group or you're hearing a story and you're learning about these people. And I do think the cool thing about triathlon is a lot of the people are pretty accessible. And so when you hear, you know, these voices on a podcast, you might actually get to meet them at a race. And I think that's been a really, really fun thing for me.
What a day. What a time. Haley Chura, you are amazing. But what I think you taught us in this lesson, or in this time that we've shared together, is get you a boss who's going to support your race habits. Okay. So, y'all go out there. If your boss isn't supporting your race habits, you tell them to get with the program. No, not really. But, you know, hopefully you have a boss that will support your race habits. And I think the first part of just going out and racing and having fun. And we can take a little bit away from the dopey challenge of just going out there and just having it for the fun of it all. But most importantly, just don't quit. Keep going no matter what. With that said, Haley, you know, we do a thing called rapid fire. So I have to send you through our rapid fire drills. So I hope you're ready. So yeah, let's do this.
All right, I'll try my best.
Wetsuit or no wetsuit?
No wetsuit.
Okay.
But I hope the water's cold.
So you like cold water now?
I like cold water. I just don't want to wear a wetsuit in
Oh, okay.
it. So I want it to be barely legal. I'm like the person when it's barely legal who is hoping it's just on the non-wetsuit side, but still pretty cold.
Okay. Let's see. Favorite thing about triathlon at this moment in your life?
Community, the community. It inspires me every single day.
Okay. Favorite place to bike?
My garage. That's terrible.
So
That's...
are you an indoor biker too? Like you like to indoor cycle?
I love riding inside. I do. I love riding inside. I ride inside a lot. And I think I've gotten a lot stronger from that. I love a good adventure ride. I will admit, I love a good adventure ride. You know, there's some good climbs around me. And I've gotten to ride in Yellowstone Park, which is incredible. If you have, I encourage people to do that with like support, like because there are a lot of very large wild animals. So if we have to pick an outside place, I'd pick Yellowstone Park. But otherwise, the most convenient and the place I get the best workouts in is probably my garage.
Favorite place to open water swim?
Locally we have a reservoir called Highlight Reservoir and I love swimming up there. And but I'm trying to think like anywhere in the world. I mean, Kailua Bay in Kona is pretty special. I am someone who gets very seasick very easily, so I don't open water swim a lot, but there is something special about that place that I hope if people get a chance they can do it. I'm not going to say Lake Lanier.
I don't think anyone should say Lake Lanier right now, but it's all good. What is one thing you carry two of?
Two of
Like you're always making sure you have double this.
goggles and that's like a, you know, that is probably a nice extra thing, and I know that that's like a extra expense sometimes to have always a spare pair of goggles, but I live in, you know, a little bit of a fear of having goggles break, and having a spare pair is nice. Also, I like having a new pair in case, you know, so they don't fog.
Do you have any race superstitions?
I don't think I have like major superstitions. I love if we have an in-water start, I love before the start turning around and like looking at the crowd and just like looking at all the people that are out there getting ready to cheer for you and realizing that you are like so supportive and you're part of this really, really cool event and just like taking that second to take in your surroundings, which I guess you could do even if you're standing on the line, just like take that deep breath and like realize how special it is to be spending your morning or your day with all these people doing a really cool thing.
What's a piece of advice you would give to a beginner who's just starting out?
Oh, I know I should know this question. I should have thought of this one. I think, like what you say, give it a try. And like, there is no bad result. I think you have to be really, really proud of yourself for trying, for getting on a start line. And I think that's where I would start. If you can get yourself on a start line, it's something to be incredibly proud of and something to celebrate, regardless of how the rest of the event goes. If you finish, if you don't finish, like getting on the start line is scary and incredibly hard. And I'm proud of whoever it is for getting on that start line. And probably things are going to go better than you expect. So, but you got to be proud of that standing on that start line first. That's the first thing to be proud of.
And favorite post-race meal.
Most recently, I had a burger after Miami. That was very delicious. It was great. And I was actually in drug testing for excessive amount of time post-race. And so the burger was very, very needed. But I've also, after like Ironman Coeur d'Alene last year, I was in bad shape. I was like laying on the ground and I had some tacos and they brought me back to life. So I guess I'm saying anything, but I'm not answering these very rapidly. Sorry, this is not my forte.
Okay, it's okay. And finally, do you pee on the bike or get off and take a proper pee break?
Okay, this is wild. I don't usually need to go on the bike.
Not even
And
for full Ironman?
yeah, I mean, maybe I need to hydrate a little better. I don't know, but I don't usually need to go on the bike. I will go sometimes in transition after the bike between the run, which is one of those things that sometimes like I think people don't necessarily want to do because it's like slowing you down and you might have a slower transition. But that is something I would encourage people like make yourself a little comfortable before you start that marathon or before you start that run if you need to, and use the porta potties if you need to, because it can help. I think you can gain minutes by being more comfortable. But yeah, usually I wait till I'm in transition. So I don't know if that if that fits.
Something out there for everybody. We've heard it all on here. So there it is. Haley Chura just waits until transition, which
Yeah.
is fine. So I love it. I love the answers, right? Because you learn something about a little bit about everybody with that particular answer. So kudos to you. All right. Well, as we say, whenever you try beginners, like you always win. We have a new element that is on YouTube only called Ask a Coach. We want to make this sport accessible. So if you have a question, there will be a link in the bio or just email us at tblpodbiz@trybeginnersluck.com and submit your answers. And we have our resident coaches who will answer your questions for you. With that said, we are out and we look forward to hearing from you until our next episode. We're out. Peace. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to this episode. We need your help so we can continue to try at TBL. So for more information on where you can find and subscribe to this podcast, visit www.trybeginnersluck.com. And don't forget, whenever you try Beginner's Luck, you always win.